Chapter 5.
What time is it?
The old man's voice shook me out of my nostalgic days, and my body jolted back roughly into the real world, and out of those sepia archive days of yesteryear. I turned to him and realised where I was again, and I sighed. I mumbled, peering down at my watch. It was cracked, probably in the commotion where the lift grounded to a halt. Oh, shit! This pissed me off big time, as the watch had been passed down through the generations, from my grandfather, Cutie, to my old man, to me. I held it to my ear, and there was no ticking, no grinding of workings. Fuck all. Oh, it was buggered.
Oh, what does it matter anyway, eh?
Moaned the old-timer. He was quite right, though. Time didn't really matter for him anymore. Now his wife was most certainly as dead as Julius Caesar. Me, on the other hand, I valued any time available to me, any hour I could spend in the company of dear Philippa. After all, I was very late for our meeting now, and I'm sure her happiness relied on the sight of my beaming face, grinning from ear to ear. The fresh smell of the flowers was gone altogether now, drowned out by sweat and farts. It was very hot in that lift, too, as hot as tea time when Mother Dearest was roasting a badger back in the good old days at Sand Coaster. Mum plonked down a huge serving in front of me at the dining table. "There you go, son," she smiled, proud of the meal she had made. "A nice big tea for my boy. A big tea for a very good lad." I tittered quietly and tucked right into the badger and chips. Oh, I can still taste it to this sodding day. Oh, so good. "You are doing so well at school, son. Mr. Henrietta sang your sweet praises at the parents' evening on Monday. He sees big things ahead for you, lad." Smirking all over my mug, I felt great. My sister Mona sat there beside me at the table with a face like a smacked bullock, scowling at little old me like I was a rapist. Mum was not so proud of her, I can tell you. "And you," snapped Mum, giving Mona a little smack on the shoulder. Mona scowled at her like a dog being told off for chewing the carpet. "You bring shame to me because you are a little git."
"Why, just because I'm not on all fours tying the teacher's laces with my teeth like that little creep," Mona retaliated.
But it was a no-win game with Mum. But she tried, God bless her.
"Maybe I just don't want to listen to those old farts at the school. What can they teach me that I can use in real life? Nothing, that's what. It's just a load of tosh, so it is."
Dad was across the table, eating his tea quietly, but I could see his hands shaking and the anger rising in his body. His teeth squeaked together and his fists clenched so hard around his knife and fork that they began to bend. Then, all of a sudden, he looked up across at Mona with an intense hellfire glare that could burn a hole right through you.
"For God's sake, Mona, shut your trap!"
Mona instantly fell silent, a face of shock and pale fear.
"Morning, Mona, the morning mini," mocked Dad. "Christ, where did we go wrong with this one, eh?"
Then he shoveled in another gobful of nosh and chewed away frantically. Mum gave baby Ben his food and took her seat across the table.
"How day at home, Catherine?" asked Dad,
looking across at Mum.
"My name is Mary," she said.
I know, but I prefer the name Catherine. It's a much, much nicer name, isn't it? It's more womanly, it's more salty, and less like mustard near chopped pain."
I interrupted his rant. "Dad," I said, swallowing a lump of badger's arse, "wasn't that grandmother's name too?" He smiled, and his eyes drifted past me, as if he was lost in a trance.
"Aye, lad," he said, "it was. Catherine. Beautiful name, isn't it? A beautiful name for a beautiful woman."
He took another munch and carried on speaking rubbish.
Your grandma now. Now she was a fine woman. Such power and strength. She had hands like spades. They made your buttocks red roar if you were being a rude lad. She ruled the home with an iron fist and with an acidic tongue. We feared the woman, but we loved her too. You never wanted to get on the wrong side of her, no way. But when she was sweet, boy, oh boy, the sun shone out of her mouth and fucking eyes. She had the longest legs. They seemed to go on and on and on and on. And I always remember those glorious pins of hers. They were longer than me. They were as long as the Eiffel Tower.
And as Dad waxed lyrical about Grandma's best traits, my mum gave a long sigh and a look of sheer boredom. Something tells me she had heard all this too many times before.
Her lips, right? Her lips. They were like cherries blowing kisses in the air as she spoke. But when she was cross, she breathed fire. She actually did. She breathed fire. Everybody feared her.
Dad paused and stared deep into the air. Then, as quick as a flash, he clicked back out of the strange daze and proceeded to munch with the meal.
So, listen, consider the name Catherine anyway, he added.
No, Mum said, I am not changing my name now. I have had this name of mine for close to 40 years now, and I am quite fond of it, thank you very much.
Dad looked disappointed.
Son, he said to me, when you have kids of your own, carry the name on and give it to your first daughter, right? Grandma Catherine would be so grateful if she wasn't dead. If you could just do that one kind thing in her memory, right? In her memory.
I thought for a moment or two and realised it was no big deal, really. And if it was to make Dad so happy, then why the devil not, eh?
Sure, Dad, I said. No problem.
Superb, Dad said, his face lighting up like a lampshade made of skin and facial bits and bobs.
That is very good of you, son. That will make your dad a happy chap, it will. Your mum, she wouldn't call our daughter Catherine, despite my requests, and that shattered my spirit. Instead, we settled on Mona, after her favourite painting.
Mona kept her eyes on her plate as she ate, and Father continued in his mocking taunts at everyone.
The Mona Lisa? Ha! Piece of bloody junk, if you ask me. A stupid scribble of a rather mannish bint dressed in black, looking like she just shat out half a stone of shit in her knickers. But your mum insisted. No, she insisted.
Dad gave a smirk and a look of bitterness aimed at Mum, who sat there awkwardly. I decided to break the horrid silence just for Mother's sake.
I'm off to Cat's tomorrow for tea. Is that okay, Mummy?
Mum looked at me with a hint of concern on her tired features.
Well, I don't really like you going to Cat's house. I think his mother is, well, a bad influence, really. I don't like her too much. She sets a bad example.
Why? I asked.
Mummy was about to reply, but Wicked Dad barked out and interrupted her. Because she's a bigamist, son!
A what?
A bigamist, Dad replied, looking at Mum out the corner of his eye.
He was trying to get at her, and it was working.
It means she likes having various partners. She believes it to be the best way to live one's life.
Look, he doesn't have to hear all this, Mum said.
Shut up, Catherine, Dad snapped back.
It is Mary, said Mum.
Okay, whatever. Short talk, Mary. Dad banged his fist on the table, shaking the plates and cutlery. Mona sighed and rose to her feet. I'm sick to death of you, Dad. I've had enough of you. The way you make Mum sad and make her feel low. You're nothing but a bully, Dad. Does it make you feel good about yourself to put Mum down? Eh? Eh? Dad gave Mona a burning, intense glare. You're pushing your luck tonight, Mona. Really pushing your luck. Dad spat back at her. Now sit back down and eat your badger.
I felt a storm brewing. Mona and Dad were always at war with each other, having intense arguments at the dinner table. They were never nice to each other at all. I wanted us all to just get on with each other, so I tried to calm this manic situation. Sit down, Mona, I said.
Yeah, Mona, Dad added. Sit down. Eat your damn food and be good like your little brother.
Dad was smirking slightly, and I could see the smug feeling of power in him as Mum held her head down, supported by her shaky hands. The more I think about it now, the more I realise how Dad loved to mess with everyone's emotions and minds. Baby Ben and I were safe, but Mum and Mona got it bad from him. He saw it all as a fun game, I'm sure, but I never understood why. Mona sheepishly sat back down at the table, nervous and slumped. surely knowing that Dad had won the game. Dad gave me a grin, a sadistic smirk that sent a cold shiver through my body.
"Anyway," he continued, oh so casually, "Cat's mum believes in shagging various partners in order to quench her desires, fill her demanding sexual appetite, you see. She's my kind of woman, she is. Very powerful, very sensual. Just like Grandma Catherine was."
And the following silence was cold, long, and awkward. A chilling void of discomfort. Mum didn't look up from her plate at all, and Mona didn't dare say another word, while Dad beamed all over his leathery face. Well, that night, I remember lying in bed and hearing Mother sobbing in her bedroom. Dad had gone out on the piss with his mate, Doily, the eccentric landowner of the nearby farmyard, who had grown up with Dad through his school days. I wanted to go and check on Mum to see if she was okay, but I decided against it, leaving her to herself. In my haunted sleep, I heard Dad come back home that night, and his loud arrival crept into my dream. In my nightmare, he came through the door covered in snakes, which were wrapped all around his body. His eyes were orange, and his face was all sunken and bony.
"Oi!" he screamed. "Where is Prince Scrot? Where is that dead man? He was supposed to be helping me align all the jackets. God, I hate that stupid son of a baker man!"
His legs were bending in unnatural and impossible positions, up his back and over his shoulder, as if he was made of rubber. In reality, he just stumbled in and fell asleep in a heap on the armchair in the living room.
The next day, I was at Kat's house eating tea. We were both in the living room watching Banana Man, eating noodles and hot dogs, having a generally great time indeed. Then, I was disrupted by the need to urinate. A painfully tight, overwhelming feeling that I had to empty my bladder right away. "I'm just going to go pee-pee, Kat," I said, leaving the room. I'm not sure he even noticed that I was gone, because he was so glued to Banana Man on the screen. But anyway, I just went up the stairs into his long hall, and it was all so dark and gloomy, and everything looked so massive too. I passed an old grandfather clock and imagined it dressed in a cardigan with a comb over, offering me sweets. I declined the offer, but gave him a silent thank you, seeing as he was being so kind. And then I spotted the open bathroom door at the end of the hallway, a nice shiny toilet awaiting the arrival of my strong soda-influenced piss. Oh, the sight of it eased me immediately. But as I approached it, I heard the weirdest sounds. Sounds I'd never heard before. They were like groans. Quiet ones at first, but then they grew louder as I walked on towards the toilet. It was a sort of mixture of discomfort and pleasure. A strange mix, for sure. But there was also the sound of springs boinging about the place, and the creaking of stuff, too. As I got to the bathroom, there was a slightly open door at the left of me, and through the crack, I could see Kat's mother, naked, lying down on her back. And on top of her was a man, one of her hunks, as she called them. He was writhing about over her and touching her body. At first I thought he was hurting her, judging by his aggressive movements and the strange sounds coming out of her mouth. And just as I was about to burst through the door and stop him, Kat's mum called out,
Oh, that is so good. Oh."
And at that point, I realised she was having a good time. Whatever was going on in there, and so I decided to leave her and her gent to do their thing. So I went for a piss. Later on, Kat and I thought we'd take a trip down to the old factory to see Uncle Archie, through the overgrown weedy fields and across the rugged hills and slopes which led to the barbed wire fence. We knew we were getting closer when the faint smell of incense sticks lingered up our noses, as well as the stench of the cheese and burned-out candle wax. Whenever the world got me down, I knew that a tale from Uncle Archie would raise my cracked spirits. And there he was, knitting together a red jumper from thick wool, as the little mice scurried around the big hall. Archie was calmly humming a tune as he worked away, his glasses just on the tip of his nose. The humming ceased when he spotted us, and a huge friendly grin appeared on his face.
"Boys! Boys!" he cheerily greeted, clapping his hands together. "How are things, boys? So nice to see the pair of you, so it is. Come and sit before me, boys." And we parked our bottoms before him on the ground. "So then," he said, putting down the jumper, "what brings you both to my domain today, then?"
Archie was always so darn happy, even though he had a life that was far from luxurious. Spirits were always so high with Uncle Archie. Sometimes I wished he was my dad, although I would never tell him this fact. So I told Archie about my dad and about how much of a tosser he had been the night before and how it had got me a little down.
"So, your father's behaviour has been upsetting you then, has it, no boy?"
"Well, yeah, that's pretty much it, Uncle Archie."
He pondered as he pulled a chunk of cheese out of his top pocket and handed it into the gob of his old favourite mouse, Clive Spencer, who was very old and fat. "Your father, he was always a very stubborn one."
"You knew my father?" I asked, totally shocked by the news.
"I did indeed, dear boy."
I was stunned by this, as it seemed Archie had known everyone in his colourful life at Sand Coaster.
"Years ago, long before you were even born, when your dad was a young boy like yourself, I owned a baker shop in the town, and your dad used to come in, sent by his mother, to get some special bread and Scotch eggs. His mother came in sometimes, that's your grandmother, and she was one scary bitch, I can tell you. She had a hard face and big, massive hands."
I nodded in understanding as Archie picked up the old mouse and gently began stroking his back with a pinky.
"Your father and I became friends. I used to take him down to Grilly Pond Lake, and we'd eat special bread and talk about things. I would tell him tales, as I do with you, and he would tell me his problems. I would take him to the old cafe by the river, a lovely establishment that sold Rice Crispy Squares, years before they were readily available in every shop around. There was a good friend of mine down there, too, the Pastor Man. He would cheer your dad up by pushing him on the tire swing, and all three of us would sing songs together, as if to sing our troubles away. Your father was happier around me and the Pastor Man down at Grilly Pond Lake. You see, his father, who would have been your grandfather Cutie, who is no longer alive, in fact, the true story of your grandfather's death is a very dark one indeed." Now I was very intrigued.
But Archie looked reluctant to share the tale with me. "What happened?" I asked. "Tell me." I'd never learned the true fate of Cutie. Dad had told me he went off with Greta Garbo to Brazil. But this was obviously a load of bollocks. Archie looked at me, sizing me up and down, judging whether I was ready or not to hear this sordid tale.
"Well," he sighed, "if you really want to know, I shall tell you."
He sighed and he placed old Mr. Mouse back on the floor.
"Now this is going back even further, before your dad was even born. Now, the town had its various misfit characters. There was Chesto My Pirito, the one-armed market man with 60 teeth. There was Manera and Carabajaga, two men who were arrested for selling emotions in the town market. There was also the seldom seen and hated town nuisance, Kivin the Sniffer, a very short fuckpest with a huge nose, who snuck around the town at night, snaffling at doors and windows, searching for moist twat."
I was confused by all this stuff, wondering where Cutie came into all of this nonsense. But Archie continued telling his tale.
"There was also a town bordello, whorehouse, if you like. It was in a cellar below the church, and the church doubled as a pornographic magazine shop run by the sleazy vicar, the man with yellow jeans on.
The underground whorehouse was christened the Sex Dungeon, and sometimes referred to as the Dungeon of Filth. It was run by the Filth Baron, Roland Filth. He hired all the whores, and in the back room was a kind of walk-in safe where all the cash was counted out. And in there was old Larry, a retired sex maniac, with a legacy of 50 years of muck under his belt. And he spent his days counting the earnings and supervising all the bookings. Roland had booked the finest prostitutes for the dungeon. He had dirty Aunt Greta, an aging dominatrix, and Billy Blower, her filthy daughter. They were both fairly popular sluts, but neither were anywhere near as popular as long-legged Catherine. Everybody wanted Catherine, but if she was fully booked, you'd have to settle for one of the others. I went in a few times, not for sex, obviously, but to try the wonderful malt loaf they had there. But I never enjoyed Catherine, for she was always there with very high-paying accountants, policemen, politicians, and bank managers. Anyway, she was also having an affair with the Baron, Roland. In the end, after their passions took over, she became pregnant, and the Baron took responsibility for the child. They soon got married, after the child was born, and got a nice little house together. Catherine retired from the dungeon, while the Baron continued to run it. But one fateful night, Kevin the Sniffer took a trip to the dungeon with a pocket full of cash ready to blow on sex. But all the whores refused to sleep with him, for not only was he a repulsive little gimp, but also a dirty-minded sicko with a fondness for vile sexual antics. Turned away at the door with his bag of nipple clamps and torture devices, Kevin was furious, and he swore revenge. And later that night, he returned, sneaking inside and setting fire to the dungeon. Setting fire to it. Well, everybody inside was burned to a crisp. Even Kevin himself, seeing as the daft oaf blocked his own escape route. But also killed in the blaze was the Baron. And Catherine was devastated. She mourned for years the death of her beloved husband, whom she had nicknamed Cutie.
As Archie spoke, I suddenly shuddered as I began to make a frightening and chilling realization. I picked together the names in the story, and Archie saw the look on my face when it finally all cleared up in my mind. He nodded.
Yes, Catherine is your grandma, and the Baron of Filth was your grandfather Cutie.
Ooh, I felt odd. And even though at the time I was far too young to fully understand what it all meant, I still knew it was a sleazy truth indeed. Well, the room fell cold and silent, and Archie said nothing else, planting a comforting hand on my shoulder. Now I understand why my father was so messed up. Cat sat there, feeding the mice cheese, oblivious to the realization I had just made.